everything that we wanted to do and that had to be stripped back so that you could actually get something out to market. We didn't think that was going to be as big an impediment. We just felt that it was the right thing to do by our customers. And we started getting customer requests. Why can't we collect for a gift? Once that reached a critical mass, we decided, you know, this is something, we can take it to the US. We want people to feel connected because people genuinely want them to know that they're important. It has made me a more patient person and has made me a less judgmental person.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman with Intellectual Strategies. We're a law firm that works with a bunch of innovative startup scaling companies, and we talk with a bunch of CEOs about things going on in their business. There's a lot of exciting stuff we see behind the scenes, but we can't share that stuff from our clients with you guys. So we reach out and we bring on other interesting, successful CEOs, co-founders who are growing their own businesses to share some insights so that our audience of scaling CEOs can see some of the behind the scenes things that are happening in other businesses. We think it helps grow the ecosystem. So really glad to share with you today that we've got Julie Tallman from Group Together on our podcast. And I'm laughing a little bit because I messed up that name when we did the icebreaker segment. If you listen to it already, you know I messed it up and I'm trying to fix it. So I'm trying to repent here, Julie. It's great to have you on the show.
All good. You did an excellent job.
Oh, thank you. Real-time feedback. You know, it has nothing to do with anything other than one time I did a podcast. I was a guest on a show and literally I think it took 10 minutes to get the intro right. The guest and I were having a fantastic time while she laughed about, you know, saying words wrong for I don't know how long. I think it was like engineer. She couldn't say engineer or something like that. So it was, again, nothing to do with this episode other than good conversation, I guess. Well, but Julie, we had a good little conversation about, you know, before about some things outside your business. The full episode here, we want to jump into your business and kind of go through the breakout arc where we talk about, you know, what were you building? Where were you getting momentum in the business? Once you gain momentum, things always shift, you know, whatever that is. And sometimes things break. So we're going to see what broke in your business or what was maybe about to break. And that really leads us into talking about the breakout moments, right? What are the things that you and your team do to fix or to avoid the breakages in the business? And when done right, those breakout moments lead into breakthroughs and new trajectories for your business. So just want to give you a reminder about that breakout arc and also orient our audience, because this is a little bit of a new concept that we're trying to use this framework more consistently. So they'll hear that and know that we're going to try to walk through those things when we talk together here. So Julie, you're with Group Together, though. You and your co-founder started this, and I was on your website, and I actually love the concept. I'm not going to try to explain it. I'll let you explain it so I don't mess it up, say it the wrong way, and then you have to fix it anyways. But I love the concept because it feels like it's really a simple solution to bring people together. You know, I walked into, where was it? I was visiting a company 10 years ago or something. In fact, it was Blender Bottle. If you're familiar with them, they make these little shaker bottles, right? Yeah. They're made here in Utah. I walked in there. This is what your website reminded me of. And on the table while I was waiting to meet with their CEO, they had like two or three books that were almost like year end, what do you call them, out of high school, your yearbook, right? Yep. You're like year end yearbooks. And that's not what you guys do. But as I flipped through this, they had pictures of all the people and the events that they'd done over the last year. And when I looked at your website, I thought, it just reminded me of that, because I thought this is really about bringing people together. This is a solution about how maybe people in a company, maybe people in a, you know, social group, maybe families stay connected in a way. Did I get that right?
You absolutely did. How it originally started out was my co-founder and I, we both have twins, and we were both on the birthday circuit for the kids. So going to multiple birthday parties every single weekend. And, you know, you put time and effort into finding that gift, wrapping that gift, and then having your child present the gift in a nice way. And then there's inevitably the wrapping paper comes off, and the child, being a child, turns around and says, oh, I hate this, or I've already got this, or this is a stupid gift.
Look, Mom, they gave me another one.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just think, why? You know, so a whole year of that is quite frustrating and really expensive. And you think like you're throwing money out the window. So in discussing it, we realized that it wasn't just us. You know, it was other parents were frustrated as well. And so that's how Group Together started, is that what if we got all the group of parents to chip in $10? There's 20 of us. And so we can give the child a $200 gift, right? Much better than all the little plastic toys that you could possibly give, and much less junk around the house. So as we discussed it more, we realized that there were several different sides to it, right? That you can put in less money, but we didn't want it to seem like a money grab, like it was transactional, like, hey, if you're coming to my birthday party, give me $10.
Right, right.
So we made a very nice invitation to invite parents to chip in. We made sure that when you were contributing, it didn't feel like a money grab, that you'd signed a group card. You could put in a photo of your child. And then at the end, we also wanted to make the recipient experience just as nice as receiving the gift. So that we call it a magic moment, where you as the person giving the gift feel good about giving it, and the person receiving it has the card envelope opens, the card comes out, you page through the card, the gift unwraps, and it's all a digital experience. And so we wanted, it was very intentional how we built it, so that the whole process felt very nice. And that's how Group Together was born, from that idea and those frustrations around giving a gift. And then trying to make, as you said earlier, everyone feel good about giving one great gift, whether you're doing it as, you know, for a kid's birthday, whether you're doing it for parents' anniversary, or whether you're doing it at the office.
I love that. And you've got a bunch of different examples of cards and on your site. The ones that caught my attention were the ones where I kind of pictured it as, oh, it's the, like, everyone in the office says, hey, happy birthday to somebody, or, you know, or we appreciate you as, you know, for fulfilling a role in the office. And I didn't picture it as a kid's birthday thing so much, but maybe that was just my youngest is 16. I haven't been facilitating birthdays for a little while. So my mind went straight to, oh, you know, I love the ones that have a picture of everybody from the office or wherever. And they basically are saying, we appreciate you. Like, we're glad you're on the team. Happy birthday, or great accomplishment, or whatever it was. And it just seems like a really, I actually envisioned using this for my team and saying, we should celebrate birthdays better than we do. And maybe this is one way we can do that.
Well, a very practical solution. Yeah. Back to the premise of your show. That's where we ended up after our breakout moment.
Ah, sounds like we're going to, am I jumping ahead?
You are. I could give you the result, but
that's a little foreshadowing. That's okay. Yeah. I love that. Well, so tell me, as you're building this, how long has it been that you've been building with your co-founder?
We're in our 11th year.
11th year. Okay. So you're just about ready to become an overnight success.
Exactly. Right? That's exactly where we are. We're poised for that.
And where are you guys? Because you're traveling. You mentioned that earlier. You're traveling away from home right now. You're in Austin. And are you guys located together? How did you find each other? Were you in the same place?
We were both in Sydney. In Sydney. Our kids went to the same school.
Okay. But you've grown now to the point where you are expanded into the U.S. How did the growth start in Sydney?
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind-the-scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential, so we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
The growth started with the same group of parents, right? So we introduced the idea of Group Together to our parent group. And then, of course, you know, and I'm sure it's the same here, though I didn't raise kids in the U.S., but that some parents have kids in one school and another school. And so it word of mouth is how Group Together spread. So it spread in and amongst the parent group. And so it didn't just stay for birthday gifts because it can be used for so many things. But then it went on for, you could thank your coach at the end of the season, and you could thank your teacher at the end of the year. And that, so there were a lot of different occasions that parents could use it for, in addition to using it in the office. But really where it grew is it grew out of our parent group in Sydney, and then spread. And so to this day, that state, New South Wales, is the biggest user within Australia.
Well, that's fantastic. Was the growth pretty organic then? It sounds like it just word of mouth and it spread. Did that make it fast or slow, or how did the growth feel to you guys as you're doing the development and seeing it spread out? Did it feel fast? Did it feel slow?
Well, having not started another business, it felt like it was, which isn't really a great answer, but it didn't feel like a rocket ship, you know, if that's what you mean, but it did grow the way we thought it was going to grow. So, in terms of the group together itself, when someone organizes a group gift, they invite all the rest of the parents. And so that's how the rest of the parents find out about group together. So it's not just one to one. And so that's that sort of virality is how it grew. We always felt that we'd be able to convince other people that saw how easy it was to set up another one. So in that sense, that's how it grows. But we also found that there are certain types of people. There are people that are organizers, and there are people that just, are contributors, and they just want to sign, or they just want to chip in. They're not really the organizer type. So one of the things that we had to go out and find is the organizers. And so get out the word to all of the organizers. And that's how, so probably I would say it wasn't a rocket ship, but it still grew through word of mouth.
Yeah. Look, I mean, because you've got that kind of that network effect of just self-reinforcing growth. I'm picturing here in the U.S., I'm picturing, teacher appreciation at the end of the year. Like it'd be very easy, and people are probably doing this, but probably need to do more of it, right? The teacher gets a card at the end.
I need to get the word out.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of, my kids have been on tennis and cheer and soccer and wrestling, like teams, athletic teams, and every athletic team there's like a couple moments. I don't want to call it tension, but a couple moments in the year where you're like, okay, we need parent assignments, and everyone's like, you got one or two people who want to run everything, and the rest are like, I'll support, but don't put me too much in charge. So you got that tension of kind of parent assignments at the beginning of the year, and at the end of the year, you're like, okay, we need to come together and just do something to show we appreciate our coaches. And this, like, I'm actually curious why I haven't seen this in the past with my kids' teams and coaches, because this is such an elegant, simple solution to really do what we're trying to do anyways through GroupMe and through Slack and through all these, whatever platform the teams have adopted. Like, this is an elegant solution, I think.
Thank you very much. Well, we think so too. And it's just, it's just a huge market, right? So getting the word out it's not that it's difficult. It's just very expensive, right? So it's a matter of like, where do you put your resources? But yes, that's exactly how it was originally set up. For exactly that, to thank the wrestling coach. In Australia, anyway, a lot of the coaches are volunteers. They don't get paid. And so there is really that, like, you're thanking a fellow parent for taking time out of their schedule every single week for that season. And you want to thank them.
Yeah. And I have to plug, because my son did 1 year of wrestling last year. I don't know if he's going to do it again. It is a tough sport, but he had a lot of fun. And those coaches there, that a lot of them were volunteers, and they just absolutely, they were super influential on him for the, 6 months that he was doing the program. And we watched from the sidelines as parents, and we're like, the attention that they gave to him during his match was one-on-one or even two-on-one sometimes. And then after the match, they sit down. Like, it really is impressive. And I've done some coaching, but watching these guys coach and the passion they have for it, you really do want to say thank you at the end. And so again, that's why I look at this and I say, this is the easier way to say thank you than what we've been trying to do all along. So yeah, I don't want to dwell on that.
Like, otherwise you have to knit together so many different things. Like, as you said, it's just like your payment app and Slack or WhatsApp all those different things. And someone gets left off and someone didn't pay. And so that's all put together on Group Together.
Well, distribution, we may have to talk about distribution and, or at least getting the word out, the marketing side of it, because that sounds like that might be one of the issues. But I do have two other questions, because if this is 11 years old and you started building it, that would have been 2015-ish. You weren't vibe coding this. This was a serious effort to get this built. How did that feel? Like, what did you run into when you're like, we have this idea, Let's go build it. And you're like, wait a second, what does it actually take to build? Because it's your first company that you've done, right? And so building this platform was also new.
Yeah, it was, and also for my co-founder. And so, you know, basically you go to your own network to find out, has anybody else done this? What does it cost? You know, can we do this? And, you know, we still have a photo of the two of us on her living room floor with little post-it notes, trying to wireframe out what we wanted it to do and all those things. And then finding, I think we went through at the very beginning, it took us a long time to get to market. But we went through a couple of different designers and we went through a couple of different developers until we found, a team, two people at the time, that could actually build it for us. And I think that was our very first lesson in how people can exaggerate what they know and what they're able to do, and how difficult it is to sort of probe and find out like what you're going to get for what you're paying for. But in the end, our team, who is offshore, but he has been with us, you know, after we went through those first two initial steps. He's been with us from the very beginning. So, he was a fantastic find. They're based in, Pakistan, his entire team. And they've been with us the entire time. They've been fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. So good to have reliable team members for sure.
Yes.
What does your team look like right now? You know, the core team, the expanded team, what do you look like at this moment?
So we have a core team in Sydney, a core team now that's building in Austin, which is our US base. And then our development team is in Pakistan. And we have lots of, sort of part-time, because we haven't needed them full-time, but we're gradually putting them on full-time. That covers design, content, legal, accounting, customer service. So it's growing. We have, I think, full-time equivalents. We have about 20 people.
Okay, fantastic. And what a blessing it is in today's age where you can go find these part-time people. You can find them from wherever, communicate with them, you know, synchronously, asynchronously. You can get everything from the most expert, you know, people down to the, you know, people who are training. And as what a, we just have such a, I don't know, a diversity and depth of talent to access that it's pretty amazing. So when you guys were building this, you got your team, you started building this, did the build after finding, you know, after cycling through a couple people who didn't work out as well, was the first build and the launch, that go smoothly for you guys?
I wouldn't say it went smoothly. but that's also where we learned about what an MVP is, right? So that the thought of everything that we wanted to do and that had to be stripped back so that you could actually get something out to market.
Yeah.
And that to us was a huge learning experience. But I think that the product that we put out was stable and worked the way we wanted it to work. So it didn't have everything. It didn't have all the bells and whistles. But the core product was there and was stable. So that was good. Now, of course, you know, things will go wrong. But I think that pretty much for every build we've put out since then, I can say that I'm proud of all of those things. They never contain everything I want, but that's part of the process.
Well, how did you guys know to take an MVP approach? I mean, that's a lot of people don't do that. They come and they throw it all in. They're like, I can think of some people that I've talked with. Many of them I don't work with because their businesses never work out because they're always building the perfect product and never launching it. But how did you guys know to do that? Was it your developer who said, "Hey, listen, you don't want to build this whole thing," or do you have other mentors that you had access to, or did you just know, "Hey, let's build what we can build and launch what we can launch and then go from there"? Because not everybody does that, right? Yeah. So I'm really curious.
So when we first started, I think we thought we could get everything into it. And then it was our developer who basically said, you know, the timeline and part of working with the developer is that they want to deliver everything for you. And so it was just teasing out like, well, from a time standpoint, like how long is that going to take? You know, how long is that going to take? And so from that is where we discovered, okay, if we want to launch this year, these are the things that we're going to have to say, get put to the side. And these are the things that are most important for our customers. And being a customer at the time, made it much easier to make those decisions.
When you launched, how long was it? And what was the process to get to the point where you felt like, okay, this is working. Maybe not totally stable. We're still working out bugs, but did it just kind of move into, you know, okay, we're just slowly growing, or what did that first, I don't know, is that a year? Is that 2 years? Is it 6 months? What did that look like for you guys?
I think it was about 18 months from the time that we started designing it to the time it was actually released. And we released it into our end of year teacher thank you season, which is in November, December. So we knew that it had to go out that day. Like, we did not want to lose that season because that to us was the biggest place the place where we could make the biggest splash. And so, you know, if you think of a car, you know, like getting ready, we were throwing out this, that, and the other thing just to get it in shape so we could launch it into that time period. But it was, you know, when it was launched, it went as smoothly as we could have hoped.
Oh, that's good. You just created an image for me in my mind. I don't know if an airplane or a boat. You said car, but I'm thinking airplane and boat when they're like, we're gonna sink, and they're like, shoving everything off the boat.
Side, like, no, we don't need this, don't need that. Absolutely. Yeah.
The chaos, the urgency of that, usually when you see those scenes in the movies, is probably symptomatic of the urgency and the chaos that happens in a startup too. So that's I love that visual now.
100%.
So you guys launched, you got this developed in 18 months, you launched at the end of school year season, things went as expected. That's pretty easy. It kind of goes as expected. Did you guys plan on this being kind of a cyclical business then, if you're trying to hit like teacher end of year stuff, or did you say, okay, that's our first target market, but after that we'll hit these other things? What was your growth plan from launch day forward?
So I think, well, our growth plan was that it would just infiltrate that sort of parent group, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't schools per se, but it was what parents needed it for. And so from teacher, it would grow into, during the year, kids' birthday gifts. Right. Yeah. And grow into, you know, maybe the teacher was having a birthday and some parents want to give the teacher a birthday gift. And then it would go into, you know, the end of the summer sports season, the end of the winter sports season. So it would grow that way, because there's lots of different uses for it as well. Like, the school could use it for fundraising, you know, all of those different things is where we felt the growth path would take us.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you probably planned for some of those and said, well, we can probably go here, here, and here, but we'll also wait and see what parents do with it. Maybe parents will bring something else to mind that we haven't thought of, and probably were open to all of that. At what point in that kind of growth period, that initial growth period, did you was there a moment where you said, things have been going well, but maybe something's a little bit off, or like, we're not quite growing where we want to, or I thought this was going to happen and it didn't. Like what were some of the surprises that you had in the first few years of growing this?
I think some of the surprises were that as you alluded to, parents used it in a slightly different way than we expected, which is that we thought it was the perfect vehicle for kids' birthday gifts, right? Mm-hmm. The entire way we had set it up, and we even had made it very easy for a parent, if they wanted to donate a portion of the collection to charity, so that you could, there was also that piece of it that made the whole experience very nice. And one of the road bumps that we came up against was that it's fine if you're in this sort of situation where a class parent, again, that type of person that organizes things.
The organizer, yes.
Right? The organizer decides to set it up for all the children in the class, right? But if the parent has to set it up, then there's a bit of an etiquette issue, right? That some parents felt like it was, but I'm asking you to give me money and I don't like that, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want you to feel like you have to give me something to come to my child's birthday. And we didn't think that was going to be as big an impediment. And so that was just something that we needed to work through. So that was definitely a bump in the road that we hadn't expected when we built the website.
Did that mean that you were having a harder time getting some people to adopt than you thought you would? Because you thought you'd have more of the organizers or more of the initiators coming in and building on the platform. And it wasn't as many people initiating. So I guess another way to put that, did the transactions and the activity, did it kind of sit within the same groups for a while without expanding out?
Exactly.
Is that what it did?
So, okay. You know, you have those organizer types and they see what I like to think is the beauty of it, right? Which is that there's one gift that the child or the person, let's just say the recipient loves, right? There's less. Even from an environmental standpoint, there's a lot less trash and you know, waste that goes with it as well. You can give a portion to charity. So to us, it was just a great ecosystem. But yes, so the parents that we expected that always said they loved it, but just were hesitant to set it up themselves. So our workaround to that was that idea of the class parent, finding the class parent, the person that was going to set it up for everyone else.
Did that shift the way that you marketed this then? Did you set this up with, were you thinking ideal customer profiles and who do we go after and how do we reach them? Is that, and that shifted from maybe one profile to a very much more specific profile of the organizer? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so rather than everyone embracing it, that you had to find that organizer type.
Okay, that makes sense. And when you found those people, what did the usage look like early on? Was it, you know, one organizer would use this a few times a month, a couple times a year? What was the kind of average use?
Yeah, we always felt that the usage would be, it's not sort of an app that you would download and use all the time, right? Like that's why we didn't want to do an app because we thought that if you used it for like you had two children, you know, you have maybe two teacher's gifts, couple coach gifts and birthdays in the year. And that for us is, you know, the perfect use case.
Okay.
Right. So that's what we were going for.
Okay. And do the organizers, the people who have this organizing approach to life, do they end up using it more than that? Are they kind of like power users for you guys?
Now they are because they can see the use of it across different parts of their life, right? Yeah. So there's the personal side, family, and then kids, the school, and then they can also use it at work.
Well, I'm gonna suggest this as we're talking. I keep going back. I mean, this is the thing that as you're describing it, I think it kind of sells itself in a way, right?
We're talking about
the use case scenarios, and I literally am sitting here trying not to be distracted because I'm saying, I need to put this out to the tennis group for next year's, you know, high school boys tennis team, because this is like, this is absolutely what we should be using for that. So it just seems like a natural fit, as opposed to, you know, the kind of typical Venmo carousel that we kind of, you know, the merry-go-round we get onto, and we're like, who's going to collect this, and how are we going to do that, and who's going to remember to give, you know, get a card? I think a lot of years we have people collect the Venmo, but nobody grabs a card. And so we show up and we're like, hey, you know, we really appreciate you. We were going to get you a card, but we didn't think about it. So let us just send you this Venmo. And, you know, I don't know. There's.
And then it doesn't seem as special, right? Like, even though your heart's in the right place, right? It hasn't gelled quite the way that you want. And so everybody walks away kind of like, oh, okay. You know, let's try again next year. But, you know, that's, again, you know, that's why we coordinate the whole thing, so that it feels special for everybody.
Yeah. And I love it, because I've always, as an individual, I've said to myself, I don't love gift cards. You're like, hey, here's the same gift card I've given you, you know, to, you know, mother-in-law or parents or brother, like whoever. Here's the same gift card I've given you to the same store for the same amount for the last 15 years. Yeah. I really wanted to tell you Merry Christmas, you know, the exact same way I've done for so long. So when you have the card that goes with it, and everybody gets to contribute if they want to, put their names on it, put their thoughts on it, it just adds a dimension to the gift card ecosystem that's not present, and meaningfully not present, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we did recently, and in using AI, and we call it our magic message writer, is that we audit different cards throughout the year to see what people are putting on them, what they write. And it was one of those things where it's like, you know what? I think people need a little bit of help, right? I don't want AI to write the card for you. But I want you to be able to say more than thanks for the great year, right?
Yes.
And so we created a magic message writer, which is you put in the person's name, their relationship to you, the tone of the message, and then we ask you to write what you want to say. Yeah. And then we use that to sort of expand it a little bit. And you can even say, you know, if you know the person well and you have an ongoing, what we found is some people have ongoing jokes with their coworkers. And so some are huge Star Wars fans. And so it'll be in a character from Star Wars, or they love nursery rhymes. So you can write it like a nursery rhyme. And so we have this magic message writer that you can put it in, and then you can say, oh no, like shorten it, make it longer, make it funnier, that sort of thing. So it gives you a little bit more, I would say, meaning, and then you can edit it to your own personal style. So rather than just saying thanks for a great year, it'll come out with a little bit more oomph.
I love that. I mean, I can't think of how many times I've sat down to write something in a birthday card or holiday card, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to say here? And it's mini writer's block. Like, I don't know why it happens, right? In fact, there are probably times that I've just avoided giving a card because I'm like, I don't know. And I'm an attorney. I like use words all day long. So it ought to be easy for me. But, you know, I want what I say to be meaningful. And sometimes if the task feels too burdensome, I'm just like,
it is. It's funny. It's just like, it's just three sentences. Why can't I write three sentences? You know,
exactly. So, but what an awesome, like, that's a great tool. So you guys are, you're actually, I don't know, what made you come up with the magic message writer? Because you guys seem like you're really in tune with how your customers want to use, this tool for them, you know, for themselves. Like, to come up with a magic message writer, you know, it reminds me, like, literally maybe in 2004, I was doing mostly patent work, and we had a company, I guess I can say it because it doesn't matter because it's public, but IBM was doing a bunch of patents around essentially what we see today with AI, right? They were doing patents around writing email responses with specific tones and things like that. similar, the technology never existed really until lately. Yeah. And so that, I don't know why I bring that up other than they were trying to do it. You guys actually implemented it though in a very, a simple way to solve a simple problem in your business. And again, it comes back, I'm going to use the word elegant again, just because like that seems to fit so well with the rest of the service or product that you're offering to people. So are you just really good at this about listening to your customers or anticipating what they need?
I think it's just because we love our customers. You know, it's just, we really like the idea of what we're doing. And I can't remember what it was, but it's about a year ago and I was listening to something and it was someone who had, you know, started a charity and, you know, had changed the lives of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And I thought, oh my God, why haven't I done anything like that? Like, where is my, you know, changing someone's life? And pretty much the next day, our marketing manager sent, because sometimes we get thank you notes. I don't know why, but they make it through to our email boxes. And someone had sent a thank you note. And it was about this woman who had, she was a teacher, and her class had grouped together to give her a gift. And it was the first time that she was able to host her family for Christmas dinner. Because she used the money to buy the equivalent of an HEB grocery card. And so she could buy the groceries because she could never afford to have them before. Wow. And she just said, like, I can't thank you enough. I mean, you've not only made my year, but like I just feel like I, for the first time, I've you know, made my family proud. And I still get worked up thinking about that note. And I was like, you know what? We did. We changed her life. We made her life better. And it's that we want our customers to feel, right? So getting a note that says, thanks so very much, doesn't mean so much as when, if you can just elaborate on that a little bit. And so, you know, that's where all this impetus comes from. It's because we want people to feel connected, because people genuinely want them to know that they're important. And so we just want to facilitate that.
I love that. And group together is like, it's again, it's a, seems like a, I know it's not simple at running the business, creating the product is not simple, but from a customer perspective, it seems like a simple, easy to adopt type of solution. So, you know, I'm hoping people hear this episode and they're like, yeah, we need to use this too. Why are we not using this? Well, I want to talk a little bit about, as you've been building, what's one of the bigger obstacles that you guys ran into? Was there anything big? I know the launch was kind of smooth. It went as expected. Growth was pretty smooth. Has it been that way all along, or have you run into anything where you've said, man, I don't know, we had a trajectory, but I don't know if we're going to get past this one.
So for us that, and I've probably made it seem smoother than it was. There's always bumps along the way.
Sure.
And will things work? But our biggest challenge came with COVID. And so, as described, you know, everything was centered at the time around parents and their kids being in school and playing sports and saying thank you to their teachers. So when COVID happened in Australia anyway, it was a very quick closing down. So we had raised money, from angel investors, and they had another portfolio company that had offices in the city. And so we had just started working out of the city, feeling very grown up and, you know, the company's really doing well. And within 2 weeks, the building had shut down. Right. So you couldn't go into the city anymore. Everyone had to work from home. And then the schools, they didn't close, but you couldn't go into the school anymore. So all your kids were at home as well. All sport canceled. Right. So in that sense, it was all of a sudden came to a screeching halt. And the idea was, okay, what do we do now? right? And so that's the moment where we did a few things, but the major break was that we decided to focus on the parents, but the parents at work. Okay. And again, in Australia, it was a little bit different, but there were a lot of layoffs, a lot of people leaving, everybody learning how to use Zoom, right? You know, it just trying to figure out where everyone was. There were no, you know, talking at the water cooler. You couldn't have a birthday cake in the break room. You couldn't, you know, you didn't have, you know, your office husband or wife to chat to anymore. And so what we decided to do is our product had been built around the card and the gift together. So to sign the card, you chipped in for the gift. And they were just linked that way just because it had been built that way. And so we made a decision to actually separate them and so that the group card could exist on its own. Because, you know, you could tell in that situation, nobody had spare cash at the time to chip in for anything. And then at the same time, we didn't feel that people were in a position to pay for the card. So we made the business decision to actually make the card free. And so that anybody could sign it. And just because it was sort of that time and we thought, you know what, it's a digital card. We had been funding it ourselves until we had the investor funds. And so we thought, you know what, we can still do this. We can do this on the smell of an oily rag and allow people to say farewell, or, you know, you're important to me, or you're having a baby, or you're getting married. And we wanted them to be able to do that. And so from there, it was a loss of all that revenue that used to be tied into all of the collections. But we just felt that it was the right thing to do by our customers.
Was that a hard conversation to have with your investors? I mean, if you just received investment money, they're like, I mean, and of course, COVID threw everything into you know, chaos. I was a little surprised when you first said, yeah, COVID, because you're a purely digital business, right? Yeah. And it's like, oh, COVID had a huge impact on us because our digital business, it had been to that point very closely tied to in-person relationships. And so when you state that, I can see that. But when you said, hey, we made the decision that we're going to essentially stop making money for a little while. We're also going to build out some new product features. So there's going to be some expense. How did that conversation go?
Actually, it went, and I don't want to paint such a rosy picture of our business, but it went really well with our investors, because when they originally were interviewing us, right, to see if we wanted it or if they were going to give us the money, the one question they asked was, whose side are you on? Are you on the side of the customer or are you on the side of the investor? And so if you're on the side of the customer, your decisions are going to be based on what's best for the customer.
Right.
Not necessarily what's best for the investor. And so that's the argument we went back with, was that we're on the side of the customer.
Was this in the early days of talking with investors? That sounds like a, you know.
No, this is after we had their money.
But it seems like if like in the moment they say, hey, whose side are you on? I mean, it seems like there's a right answer, but I think some people would double guess themselves and say, well, this is the investor asking. I think they're asking if we're on their side, right? And so they want to know that we're loyal to them. But in the end, the right answer was to be on the side of the customer. So you must have pretty good investors then that are trying to emphasize. Investors. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, we did have a plan. You know, it wasn't let's just, you know, do nothing. It was like, all right, well, we are in these companies. Not everybody is in dire straits, right? There are a lot of people that are in dire straits, and those are the ones that we want to help. But there are still people that can afford to chip in for a gift. And so we'll have that business that we didn't have before, right? Because we were more in the parent outside the office. You know, not that we didn't do anything, but that it wasn't focused purely on corporate. And so now we have an entry into this market that we didn't have before. It really suits the, you know, Zoom environment where everyone is mm-hmm. distributed and they can't get to the office because they're not allowed to go to the office. And we're well suited for that. So there will be a portion of those that are gifts and we will capture that. And COVID's not going to last forever. So we think that this is enough to get us through that time.
I love the explanation. I'm curious if the, because you have a finance background, your co-founder has a marketing background. Was this as easy of a conversation between you when you approached it from the finance perspective and the marketing perspective? Was it just like, hey, here's how the finance are going to work. It'll be fine. Here's how it'll benefit marketing. It'll be fine. Was it that simple or did you guys bring different perspectives to the table?
I think that we were all on the same page. How we were going to make it work was a lot more in the air. I think that we probably painted rosier pictures of how many people were going to set up collections just to help us get through. But in the end, it did all work out. But I've got to say there was no sort of disagreement that this was the right path to take.
Yeah. And I'm not digging for disagreements because it doesn't sound like you guys have disagreements. It sounds like you guys
No, we definitely
effectively talk through.
We do, but on big decisions like that, we are on the side of our customer, right? That's where we are.
That's the point of alignment. That makes sense. I like that phrase, being on the side of your customer. What a good takeaway from, in addition to the money they gave you, the investors gave you a great phrase to align around. So that's fantastic. As you did this, were there constraints? I mean, of course there were constraints, but what kind of constraints existed in addition to COVID that were like to implement this? Was it was really just, you had the platform. Was it pretty simple to roll out the other version of the product so that you had the one tied to kind of the collecting money versus the one that would just be the card? Were these just, would you call these incremental changes, or was there anything that that you ran into trying to implement these new parts of the business that were larger than you thought they'd be?
I think there were, to me anyway, not being the engineer that had to do it, it was incremental changes. So so disconnecting the card from the collection, I from memory anyway, happened relatively quickly. And then we were able to let our customers through our emails, our organic database, let them know that this was now available. And then it spread, right? Like it spread all over the world. We used to come in and find that someone in Russia had used it, right? I definitely remember that. And then, you know, someone in South Africa had used it. And so it was just this, oh my God, like this is
was
actually,
that a, that sounds like a,
everywhere.
Yeah. That sounds like a different growth path than the Sydney based local parents group that you started with. So has it been that way all along? Did that change the way that the network effects happened in your business?
Oh, absolutely. Because before it was tied to the Australian dollar, right? So you're collecting money in Australian dollars. Mm. And so the gift that you must buy is in Australian dollars, or you can withdraw the money to an Australian bank account, right? So it was much right in that world. And so the collection piece was not on the board. It was just the card. But the network effect, right, spread, right? And so people started using it, a free product, right? Who doesn't want a free card? And so it got used everywhere, but it got used the most in the US. And I've got to say that from what we could tell from our data is that the use really was in business, in corporations. So it's not as if parents in Russia were using it for, you know, their kids' end of year teacher gifts, right? Yeah. They too were using it, or teacher cards, that they too were using it for office celebrations.
Well, I'm super glad you pointed out that there's that currency limitation, right? Like if you're collecting currency to give as a gift, like all of a sudden that gift is being given in the currency, and so you can't really use it in other countries. I hadn't really thought about it that way. So there is a very large constraint there. So opening up the new offering without being tied to the currency, the gift side of it, that really did open up the market extensively. How did you guys get into the US? Did you do some initial marketing, or did you just start seeing US orders come in?
So again, they couldn't collect, but they could use the card. So purely from their IP addresses, that's where we saw people using it. And by far it was a huge market. And then we started getting customer requests. We can see that in Australia, you can collect for a gift. Why can't we collect for a gift? Sorts of things. And so once that reached a critical mass, we decided, you know, this is something. And let's see if we can take it to the US.
That's awesome. So how long have you been in the US now, or serving the US market?
So this is our third year in the US.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we originally started out in that same sort of parent market, but it didn't. There are little differences between Australia and the U.S., and I don't think that we were on top of those. And so it was much easier to move than this requires a little bit more finesse and understanding of this market, but we really didn't have anyone here. So yeah, we thought, all right, let's just go straight into the corporate market, because businesses seem to operate the same whether they're in Australia or the US. And so that's where we are now. That's where our main focus is now. And those office celebrations, which is originally what you were thinking about, using us, right? Well, and of course, you can use us in your personal life as well. There's no reason you can't. It's just that our marketing and advertising is going towards the corporate market right now.
Yeah, I feel like I've just been outed for being for aligning 100% with the profile of the U.S. consumer that you've identified already. Nothing wrong with that, but I did actually fall straight into that, didn't I? I'm like, oh, I see this, and the application that first came to mind is the one that you guys are pursuing here.
Correct.
I guess there's no surprise in that, right? I did exactly what you thought I'd do. Very predictable. So I love it though. What's that?
That's good for us.
Yes. You know what you're doing. You've got it right. Where do you see this business going in the next 2, 3, 5 years from here?
So where we'd love to see it going. So the reason that we've set up shop in Austin is that we feel that Austin has that sort of big city, little city vibe. Mm-hmm. It's similar to Brisbane in Australia, similar to, there's a real community feel here that is smaller than a New York or a Chicago or an LA, where we feel that we can make a bit of a difference. So that's why we've started here and we'd love that same sort of grassroots growth to happen. So that's where we're focusing right now.
I love that. And if you were to look into the future sometime in the next few years, because you mentioned that powerful story about the teacher receiving the gift, being able to buy her family Christmas dinner, is there a type of customer thank you or customer validation report that you'd like to see come in here in the from the U.S.? Have you guys received those already, or are you envisioning something, you know,
received them. So we had over both Australia and the US, we had over 17,000 thank you notes sent out on the platform. And one of the ones that came through, the other example I normally give is one that came from the US, and it's a woman that went on maternity leave, and her coworkers had written her a card, and her thank you note again came across our desk and started out
I have to interrupt though. You're saying 17,000 people have written into your company saying thanks for providing this platform.
So
or 17,000 people have used the have sent the cards. I just wanted to get that number right.
Yeah. So of the people that receive a gift or a card, we have in that, remember I talked about the recipient experience.
Yes.
So it's the envelope opening and the gift unwrapping, yeah, that sort of thing. At the end of that, you have the option of sending everyone a thank you note.
Okay.
So
okay.
17,000 people chose to use that to send thank you notes back to the organizer or the people that have chipped in or signed their card.
What, one more thoughtful feature that I hadn't realized was there. So
yeah, you know, because they want to say thank you. And so who do they say it to, right?
Yes.
And so this woman was on maternity leave, and she started out with the phrase, you know, you're the one crying, I'm not crying. And went on to say how much it meant, like she hadn't realized how much her team appreciated her, right? Mm. She finally felt seen, and she wanted to let them know that she was crying into her coffee while she was reading her group card. And so, So those are the things that keep you going, right? It's just like, oh, I love this. This is great.
Those are powerful experiences. Yeah. And to think, I mean, we all want to be making a difference, right? To sit there and listen to somebody who's got maybe a lot of money, a lot of influence, a lot of, you know, charitable exuberance, whatever you want to call it, doing their thing. Fantastic. We all want to contribute. So it's really fun to see that you guys are not only putting a product out there that's being used and is useful, but you're kind of tracking in a way the success of the product with these 17,000 people to say, hey, thanks for sending me a card. There's a lot of thank yous out there that probably might not have gone out if they had to sit down and, you know, write a separate email or prepare and mail a card to somebody or to everybody. So, I love that. Again, like I said, another thoughtful way that you guys have designed the product. That's really exciting.
Thank you.
Well, I love this, and I love, you know, one of the things I really love about this is being able to hear how businesses are built and how they work. Because as we've talked, you've kind of helped me see some of the intricacies of the business, right? And I think this is where the innovation really lies. When you start to say, oh, we're a digital gift card or a digital, you know, thank you card for people, it's like, ah, that makes sense. But when you start saying, well, the currency is an issue and the, you know, the thank you functionality, and then we have to split different, we have the you know, the gift with the currency, or we have the thank yous and the different business models for the different customer segments, it helps to convey how detailed building a business really is, right? It's not as simple as I built this platform and we send cards to people. No,
yes.
You've built an entire ecosystem to serve, you know, one or two customer segments in a really, 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 really thorough and thoughtful way. So that's the one thing I love. The other thing I love is just hearing, you know, the kind of the personal experience around building a company. And it sounds like you and your co-founders have not gotten the full experience. You haven't had you haven't shared any big fights. Nobody's left, you know, the business. Not saying none of that's happened, but I'm just saying you've had a good run, it sounds like. Is there a way that from this, you know, from the experience you've had building this business, that you would say, today I actually do this a little bit differently because of XYZ in the business? Are there ways that the business has impacted you personally?
The main thing I would say is that I think we would have separated out the card much earlier. Like we would have had it as a separate product, knowing what we know now. I don't know if that's the question you're asking, but like if going back in time, if I were to change something, that's definitely something I would change.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's a fair answer. The question I was hoping to ask was, personally, like, you know, we see these breakout moments in business, right? And all of a sudden the business starts to do something different and better because we change certain things.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes that happens on maybe a more personal internal level too, where we start to say, actually, the business is different, but I'm also a little different. I look at life differently, or I approach things differently. Do you, Julie, as an individual, is there a way that this has created shift inside of you personally?
Definitely it has. The easiest way to explain it is that I actually was our customer service representative. And at the best of times, I'm not entirely patient. And so to actually be the person on customer service and not be judgmental and take the time to listen to what they're saying and realize what they're going through, it's not necessarily a humbling experience, but it makes you realize that people are experiencing a lot of different things in their lives. And sometimes they just need someone to listen. And it's a really weird thing to say, being the co-founder, you know, co-CEO of the company, but that being the customer service rep and listening to people's issues, which aren't necessarily with our product, but are sometimes with their lives, has changed me, right? And it has made me a more patient person, and has made me a less judgmental person.
Wow, I love that. I don't know that even ties into the trajectory that we've discussed with the business today.
Completely different.
But what a wonderful outcome for you personally. Yeah. I love that. Well, Julie, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time and patience with me to explain how everything in the business has been working. It's been a real pleasure having you.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure, Jeff. And hopefully we got you to use Group Together in the future.
Yeah, I'm gonna go look at the site and send that out to a couple of friends right now. So is a platform that I think is going to be used. And for our audience who joined us this week on the Breakout CEO, thanks again for coming on, learning a few insights, and getting to know Julie Teilman from Group Together in a little bit more detail. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies, to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.